I think the Italian mobsters are the Italian mobsters from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
They definitely are.
Because I watched that at that time. So had you asked me to draw Italian mobsters today, they would look different then.
Was that like 3 years ago? 4 years ago? No, it has to be at least 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Like, we're talking plenty of seasons back. It was when Mac, he wants to become like a Guido gangster or something. And I think he buys a tracksuit and everything.
Yeah.
And around exactly that time, you gave me the script for that. And I was like, obviously, I'm using the guy from It's Always Sunny. So I basically had them up as like a reference.
Yeah, I was watching it at the same time too, and I remember we talked about it a little bit, and we were like, "That's good." We were like, "This is current. This is hot. Let's do it."
Exactly.
and now when I'm looking back on it, I'm like, "I love this background joke," but it is so funny to see that, like, even then, I felt like Sunny was like, it was just like a big thing that everybody was sharing at the same time, and now it feels like it's kind of already, even a few years later, become like TV history in a weird way.
I know the feeling. It's like it is, man, it's weird. It's weird to think that it's that old, because it felt so fresh when it came out. It felt like that new show, and now it feels like that old show.
It's yeah. Weird. Well, I'm Nick, and I'm here to talk about all the background jokes that Niels Petter Norlin has put into The Evil Life, and you're listening to The Evil Life Podcast.
You did a great job pronouncing my name, by the way.
Thank you. I'm trying to get better every time.
You know, I think you pronounce my name better than I do, because I just... because I pronounce it, so it's kind of like... like that, because it's just so long, and who has the time?
Do you feel like... Should we... When we do our next comic, which right before we started recording, we were just talking about how a few select people are going to receive printed versions of this. And we're starting to devise a plan for how we're going to share it with everybody out there. Do you feel like, are we leaving? I know you said you don't care about this, really. But are we leaving off some of the, what you would call it? You know, the stuff above the letters in your name. Do you have any of those in yours?
I do not, fortunately. Oh. I believe generally they're just called like umlauts.
Yes, thank you.
Like in German, you'd have a U with two dots above them. No, I do not have any of those.
But in Swedish, don't you have? You guys got more than?
Oh, sure,
we have those. But you don't have any. You don't have any extra stuff.
No. Not in my name, but we have three extra vowels at the end of the alphabet with extra dots above them.
Do you want to? Should we just add some of those to your name for the next project?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like
I thought you might like that.
Yeah, let's make up a few new letters while we're at it, just to make it exotic.
You know, our next comic does kind of have a made up language that you put into it, sparsely here and there. I don't know if you actually devised the proper language or just drew some cool symbols.
Oh, I did. Like it is a proper like alphabet.
I'm not surprised about that at all.
The correct translations for all of the signs.
That's a very history teacher thing to do.
Oh, I suppose it is. I mean, it's like a runic alphabet thing, but
yeah.
Because I wanted consistency. I wanted to be able to read everything. Plus, that enables me to put in jokes wherever I want. Like, I can write whatever I want.
Wait, you know what, though? We need to review that together, then, because, you know, I am notorious for trying to, like, freshen up whatever was in a script once I'm actually there lettering it, and sometimes I'll change stuff up. Yeah. So maybe I've actually changed up some of the jokes about that stuff. We need to go take a look at that first chapter again.
I have no idea what I wrote in that one. we need to decipher a few things. I'm sure it's clean, whatever the... If there are any jokes, theoretically there could be.
I'm sure it's all clean. If you remember from the last time you read it, which has probably been a while, I think when we saw the language on the floor in this underwater koala comic, which, if you head to, I think, my Instagram, you can actually see the cover of it on there, hidden in one of my posts. So Nick Marino Art on Instagram for the our 5 listeners who probably already follow my Instagram. But I feel like the last time I was reading when I lettered that chapter, I put in like I changed it to be like a joke about like the toilets or to the left or something like that, which is probably not what you originally put in those rooms.
I don't think so, but I think it's something like really generic and mundane. I know the scene you're talking about, and I think it's like entrance hallway or something like something simple, like everyday kind of, like you'd find it any kind of, it's not a place that you'd think of as like a business office or anything like that, but I might have thrown in something like it's pretty boring because it sort of would clash with the ambiance of the place in general. But that's even better.
I'm not sure. We don't even know what you put in there. It might not be better.
So in other words, I just gave us a lot of homework. Like, we need to go back and decipher a lot of text. But yeah, it should be pretty straightforward.
One thing that I have enjoyed about lettering The Evil Life so long after we started working on it is that there is a lot of deciphering to do. Like, in the chapters we'll be discussing in this episode, which include, I think it's so if you're going by the volume numbering, it's Finding Evil chapters 5 through 8. If you're a Webtoons reader, it's chapters 17 through 20, according to the numbers that Webtoons assigns on the on the contents page or whatever. A lot of background jokes and a lot of deciphering. Yeah. There's stuff in there I didn't even notice. And you know what? Maybe before we even get into it, if it's okay with you, we had a commenter who only went through our earliest chapters recently, and they asked about a background joke that you had in our second chapter that we ever posted.
I'm checking right now. So it's the
Grumble.
It's the gloom one.
Yeah. Storyflake said, "Did I just see Nessie?" Talking about the Loch Ness Monster. I think in the King's scrolls that he reads in the middle of the chapter.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. That would be... Wait, where's Nessie?
Okay. If you scroll up to about one-third of the way through the chapter, when the king first unfurls the scroll...
Right. What do you think? I wouldn't say it's... First of all, the text on the scroll... is the old name is actually an old runic alphabet that we probably should have changed. That's one thing.
Does that say Manaqua on it? Oh no, yes, that says name of the island.
The old name of the island.
It says Manawa,
and you can sort of tell that it does, right? Because there's an M and an O and an N.
I see it.
It's a scribbly Manawa, which was the original name of the island.
I think I added a K because years after naming the island, I did some research, and if I'm not mistaken, Manawa was very similar to a word that already existed in, I think, some Polynesian language. I do a lot of research when I write this stuff. I know I probably don't need to, but
I'm not surprised.
And I forget now. It might have been a word in Indonesian. I'd have to look it up again, but it was close enough to some word that I thought, let's add another letter so that we don't run into any confusion.
I just thought you wanted something that sounded a little more like sparkly water.
But it kind of does, though.
To each his own, yeah, it kind of does. It's not intentionally messy. It's more like an homage to, just old maps always having sea serpents somewhere.
I do like that. Yeah.
But you can sort of tell that you have South America to the right, and also in the north, you have cow country in North America as well.
Oh yeah, that's good. That's true. That's what it's like here.
So it's you have cow country, and a lot of cattle. It's specifically placed, I guess, in Texas, roughly. It's not really an accurate map, but
no, that's pretty accurate though.
Yeah. It's really just to get like a general sense of where in the world we're at. That it's a Pacific island, so we're just smack down middle of nowhere. Yeah, pretty much. Yep. But unfortunately, no, it's not Nessie. That would have been cool if, but it's just, it's probably like a cousin or something like that, like an unrelated sea serpent.
Okay. Got it.
Oh, you know what? Now it is. Now it is Nessie. Why not?
Okay, I'm in.
Nessie's from the Pacific Ocean, not from Scotland. You heard it here first.
When Storyflake asked that, I had to go back and look at like every page to figure out what they were talking about. I was like, I have no idea what this could be.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the cow in North America. What's the thing to the left of the cow, though? Is that like a...
I'm looking.
It's like a skyscraper. I think it's supposed to be like a city. Maybe. What is it?
I don't know.
Man, I don't even remember. Anyway, who knows? While we're supposed to talk about later chapters, but while we're at it, one of my favorite details is Gloom's dad. And there's always that challenge with masks and face and helmets and stuff. Like, how do you make a character expressive? You could either go
right.
different angles, casting darkness or light. Casting them in shadow or light, depending on like the mood and tone you want to set. But since he's magical, I figure why not just add like whatever he's talking about sort of extends like through those, like literally physically. So you can even sort of tell that, you see the ball?
Oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah, so there's like a tiny globe in the light, like there's a world map sort of thingy. No wait, sorry, that's not what it is. My bad. It's actually a bunch of ancestors. Sorry, I thought. If you look at it, it's full with like old helmets and stuff.
Well, I know what you're thinking of because two panels later, he has a globe that appears above.
Yes, later on. Well, like, was he trying to grasp
it? Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I never realized what it was.
Like, he's talking about ancestry and heritage and stuff like that. And in the globe, you'll see like these phantom masks. Of their ancestors. I think that's just one of the sort of like tiny details that sort of help communicate the character, but also, again, since we're talking about background jokes and details, it's one of those things.
Well, I feel like you've always been very consistent about stuff, surprisingly. I mean, going back through these panels has been a real masterclass in your consistency with that, because even little details like when you get down to the panel that's supposed to reveal the scroll that shows this lineage of kings and which one will supposedly rule the world in the Menaquin prophecy, even there, this image that's supposed to be that child of the 10th king is holding a little ball of energy right above their hand in that too. So it's like that image gets mimicked power. Over and over again. Yeah, it's really good.
Plus there are things like chakras and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
That appear a lot of the time throughout the like whenever they use magic, especially in the astral plane, you'll see them more clearly I try to mix and match mythologies, but I think it all comes back to the background stuff and the way you communicate a world. I think it all comes back to like me just as a kid playing way too many LucasArts point and click games. I know we've discussed this before, but you know, they're just full, like Monkey Island, Sam and Max, they're all just full of things. Like the world is so rich with detail that you can just stop. It's really supposed to be a game mechanic. You're supposed to not be sure what to click on. Everything's supposed to look clickable.
Yeah.
That's sort of the purpose of it. But to me, it sort of also became like, this is a part of the world, just like everything being so rich in detail. And I think that's just that. And I think reading a lot of Chu as well. Like, did you read Chu?
I didn't read Chu, but the virtues of Chu have been greatly extolled to me. And I did make a massive Chu mistake one time that is one of my more embarrassing comics moments. I didn't know before, I had not read the book, but mm-hmm. when we were trying to get people who'd be interested in doing variant covers for Holy Fuck, there was a lot mm-hmm. of pressure on us from the publisher to do variants. That was their sales scheme. And so we thought, we'll play ball. We'll give us a shot. Yeah. It was, you know, my first comic I had done with a publisher. So I was like, I'll see what, I thought this is just what you had to do. Anyway, long story short is I didn't know that Rob Guillory, the artist, is a devout Christian. I just knew that my collaborator on Holy Fuck, Daniel, really liked Chew. And so he was like, what if we got Rob to do a cover? And I was like, sure, let's do it. And so I found Rob's email just in his Twitter bio, which hilariously I think had follower of Jesus in it as well. But I didn't read that part. I just read the part that had his email address in it. And I shot him off an email. And he sent me a really nice reply that was basically like, no, I can't.
Yeah.
But he was so, let me see if I can find it in my email here. It's pretty funny.
I've like seen him in interviews once or twice. He seems like a really nice guy. And I love the art styling too, by the way. It's fantastic. But why I was referencing it, it's not that it's full of like these dumb jokes that I make, but he does is he leaves notes and doodles. Like people are messy. If there's ever an office, someone's left like a post-it note and they've scribbled something on something. If it's a classroom, there's stuff on the chalkboard. He leaves like text in the world, scribbles.
Yeah.
And I can imagine all of it's unscripted as well, because it's nothing. It's never something you'd really feel a need to script if you have an artist who just adds that naturally. And it really communicates sort of the world as well. I think that was a big influence, just reading it not that long ago. I think I was reading a lot of Chew as we were working on The Evil Life as well.
That would make sense. I mean, it was one of the biggest image books back, you know, in the early 10s.
And you know what? It has a good ending as well. Like, a lot of comic books, I won't give anything away, but a lot of comic books don't really know how to wrap up.
Yeah.
I was really happy with it. I guess that's really subjective. I'm sure there are people who don't like the ending, but I was really happy with the way, like, they did two extra trades for it, because it was supposed to be, I think, 10 trade paperbacks, but they ended up making 12 of it. And I think that was probably because they felt they needed to.
How many issues total did it? I thought it was supposed to be 60 issues. Did it end up?
No, it was 60. I think it's 5 per book, but I think it was supposed to be 50. But then I may be wrong. You may be right. If it was supposed to be 60, then they didn't extend it.
I don't know if it was supposed to be 60, like, from the very start. I just know. Oh. Around the time it was ending, they were talking about how it was going to be a finite 60 issues. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they were aiming for 50 from this. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. That's interesting. We do talk about endings a lot. I think because we're always thinking, because we're working on the ending of our Underwater Koalas still, and the ending for The Evil Life, which is coming up real soon, four more chapters. So the next time we podcast, we'll be talking about the end of that, or at least the end for now of that. And that was something that just kind of evolved organically. Now it reads like an ending because it has a lot of symmetry to the way we eventually remixed our own story.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I think it was just kind of another chapter.
Yeah.
Or did you always feel like it was a very set end?
I think that the thing is with the ending is it's sort of also a beginning.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of my favorite kinds of endings.
Yeah, me too. Because you get a sense of that, like, the world goes on. It's not the end of the world. It's really.
I like that feeling. You know, it's like, okay, your time with this world might be done for now, but this world's time is just getting started in this new status quo. Which is, I don't know if that's completely the way we leave them, but we'll see what people say, I guess.
And I mean, we do have plans for where we want to take the story if we ever pick it up again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, I think it feels like an end. And I'm not sure when we started that we never really knew exactly how we wanted to finish the story.
No.
Because from the start, it was really, the idea was to make it like a slice of life kind of thing. Like, and those types of stories don't really have, and don't really need proper endings all of the time, really.
No. I've never met anybody else who's gone through a similar process to what we went through with The Evil Life, where we had an idea and we started working on it. And then the idea just kept growing and evolving as we worked. And we didn't actually know what we had basically until you were finishing up the art for it. But even beyond that, maybe we didn't totally know how people were going to – what order they would read things in until I was like, okay, we got to make some sense out of all this stuff that we did.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's, like, flipped around the most, like, throughout this process. Like, we went back and felt the need to explain more things from the beginning than to continue wherever we were at. So
yeah,
we're basically showing some of the oldest chapters at this point.
Yeah, really. This next one that I'm doing is that will be out in, you know, a weekish from now.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know.
That one is definitely one of the earliest chapters. I think it's the
second one. Yeah,
it's so early on. Yeah. Yeah, it's a Hester chapter, and I love it. It's really fun, and I have not revisited it in a while, so I'm interested to see how things turn out once I really dig into it.
The art style in it isn't really as consistent with the rest of the story. It's like heavy blacks, and also the way some of the characters are drawn. But I think it's aged pretty well the way I remember.
I think it's aged great. I was just going through the panels a couple days ago and thinking about how cool and elegant and interesting the design choices you were making were in that one. So I hope when people read that Finding Evil Chapter 9, I hope they feel the same way.
I really like the car joke in that one.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
You know what I mean? That little detail. I think that was pretty. Do you want to talk background, detail, joke things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it. So we're starting out with team meeting.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're starting off with Spacelock.
We really are. But I mean, in general, Spacelock. this chapter is just like, this is probably my favorite. We say this every time we do a podcast.
Yeah, I know.
I think that might act, I don't know. Yeah, I just love that chapter. Is it my favorite? Who gives a shit if it's my favorite? Yeah. I just love that chapter.
I love the nacho thing from Spacelock.
Spacelock. Oh, so good.
Did you have nachos for breakfast? That was...
I can't remember. Was that in the? I don't know if that was in the script. I have no idea. Those scripts are so old. Who knows what the hell was in those?
Well, it's great anyway. And
thank you.
Oh yeah,
appreciate it.
The laptop says "Property of Gloom," and it's with one of those old markup.
Label makers.
Yeah, like a label maker. He's used like one of those classic black and white label makers, and he's put down "Property of Gloom, do not touch." And that's really to communicate like Hester as a person, I think.
Yeah, like, definitely.
She doesn't care. It's Gloom's laptop. He uses a smell brand.
This scene with Hester and Blarf on the couch, this was very foundational for us. Because we use this as a launch pad for something I feel like we can finally really dig into now. We can reserve a special thing for that or whatever. But our rejected animation pitch to Frederator started pretty much kind of thinking, okay, we like when our characters are in this setting together and how they behave when they're just sitting around watching TV. And then it kind of turned into a pitch, which was not too dissimilar from the story arc that we got into in the chapters we're discussing today.
I mean, honestly, I think the group dynamic is solid enough for this to be the whole comic. I could have easily just drawn this, basically.
Which is kind of what we expected it to be from the beginning, but then we had so many questions about what they were doing before they were in this situation that our comic actually ended up becoming about how they got into the situation as opposed to just living in it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But part of that pitch was a brand called Kitty Camper. And we've referenced that brand before. And Gloom has some Kitty Camper cupcakes in a box on the table. Because once we had that brand, even though the TV pitch thing didn't go through, it stuck around in the universe. It sort of became part of that world. And as
you were finalizing the art in a few different chapters, it popped up. So it's here, and Gloom's got it in the cupcakes that he's using to tempt Hester and Blarf to test their abilities. And I think we saw it earlier in Megaville, in downtown Megaville, when Hester was going to meet Midnight for the first time.
Oh, yeah. The truck.
Yeah.
Plus, I think there's a box of Kitty Camper cookies in Blarf's childhood home as well, I think.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I think.
Yeah, it's one of the things that gets referenced a few times, like Space Lock, which was just the thing we did to kind of entertain each other when we were making this. But then we saw opportunities to reference it, and I think it gets referenced one more time in our story.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think it pops up at least one more. Yeah, we'll see.
At least one
more time. I mean, yeah.
Which, frankly, I kind of want to see this show.
I kind of do. I mean, I think it was a pretty good, but, I mean, I get it. They had something similar. They'd done something what they felt was in the line of what we sort of were pitching.
Maybe we should have pitched them Space Lock instead of yeah, Evil Life.
Sure. I mean, I'm just scrolling through this issue. Anything you want to touch upon?
Well, you know, before we started recording, you and I were talking about maybe some lessons we've learned about formatting our comic for Webtoon. And while our next comic wasn't drawn for Webtoon, if we do potentially release it on there as well, we're going to be doing it maybe a bit more in the style where you break a panel out, put some white space, etc. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to lose any of your artwork the way we've had to lose some of your artwork. And something I think about when I think about this chapter, in turning these horizontal panels into these squarish panels, we lost a lot of the visual jokes of the neighbor.
Right, like when he comes walking down the street.
I think he's like still in it, kind of, but the buildup isn't quite the same. And
like he's in a great mood. Like he's probably taking the day off, or it's a Sunday, who knows? And he's just like, I'm gonna spend my day playing golf.
Yeah. So if you pop over, if you read it on nickmarino.net. Or you can go to theevillife.com, whatever your preferred way of getting there is, but you'll be on my website either way by the time you're done. And then you pop over and you read it on Webtoon, this chapter. You'll notice that the guy, he does show up, but it's completely different the way you experience him. He's just there and then it's over. Whereas there's a lot more of him and his reactions. At least I feel like the buildup is much funnier in the way that, especially when you see him walking down the street and whistling, then it's like a lot more like,
yeah,
Scott doesn't have a care in the world until Gloom ruins his car and potentially sends him to the hospital with his underground lair reveal.
He's like twirling his car keys. He's like he's in a fantastic mood.
Yeah. He's doing great. And then everything gets screwed up.
And he's not like sure, he calls them weirdos, but he's not like, he's more in shock than anything. Like, he doesn't, he's more concerned about his day than he is about his car. Like, how am I supposed to make my tea in 20 minutes? Which is great, because we want to really sell the whole thing, you should feel sorry about this guy. And they wreck his car when Gloom opens the...
It's like, golf, that's something that comes back not only in the chapters we're going to discuss now, but it comes back in the end chapters that we'll be discussing next time. And did we know that when we were making this team meeting chapter?
I'm not sure the golf guy was scripted, to be honest.
That sounds about right. That sounds like something you would have just added.
Because I think... he was supposed to lift the cart. I am confident the car doesn't even flip over. When he opens the secret door, I think... and I'm not sure that Blarf puts down the car in a vertical orientation either in the script. Like, I think that might have sort of just come naturally.
That 100% sounds like something you would just put in there. And then I get it back, and I'm like, this is great. I got to do something with this.
I think it's dumb enough that I might have done that. I'm pretty sure, because I have this vague memory of just like, we need, like, whose car is this?
I love the reveal of Gloom's mech, which I got to say,
yeah.
You know, when you're telling stories – there are just things you gravitate towards. And one of my things I always gravitate towards is I love mechs. I just think they're great. I think the whole idea of them is just so cool. And I think they're both, they're kind of like, they're rad and they're funny. And I just love Gloom that he basically, like, he built one that just looks like him.
And he's all about branding as well. Like, he's always putting his logo on everything. He's like,
yep.
You know what, where I think I got the idea for the logo from? I think I sort of looked at Spawn. You remember how Spawn has those, like, tiny skull symbols all over
the place? Yo, this is definitely a Spawn logo. And you know what's funny is I'm looking at this. I started drawing Doodle in this character recently. That is definitely me subconsciously reinterpreting Gloom's logo that you came up with. Because he's just this logo with a witch hat on top of him.
Oh. It's a pretty basic skull symbol, sort of. Like, it's just like a T-shape. But it kind of always struck me as I was – when I first read Spawn, I was probably like 11 or 12 years old. But as I grew older, it sort of struck me as weird that this, like – future that like this general to be from hell has like branding on him like a superhero would, like why does he have like these skull symbols on him? Like, is that like the official rank or anything, like the plaque, or is it like his personal taste? Like, hey, if I'm gonna be a superhero or villain, I might as well have like a sweet ass logo. It got almost comical, and I think that's sort of where Gloom's skulls originated from, because he has that banner on the wall as well with the skull.
I think that that's a really, I think that's a great observation about not just Spawn, but kind of the nature of superhero comics that probably Todd didn't even think of. He was just probably just did it. You know, it just happened.
All superheroes and villains have like these sweet ass logos. Why wouldn't they?
And it's funny because you always think to yourself, like, the one that gets me the most is Spider-Man. Like, there's no way that he did that suit. That suit is so complicated. Oh, yeah. Nobody in their right mind would try to make that suit.
But then again, like, Peter Parker's, like, one of the smartest characters in the Marvel Universe.
He is, and it's funny.
Which is also
The whole thing is funny, and I do love those things about superhero stories, and I think that that kind of thing is the sort of thing that we've channeled a lot of. Maybe we haven't even thought about it that much, like, just in terms of how funny the things are that these characters are always doing. You know, they're always branding themselves, they're always making these outrageous costumes for themselves, like
even the wardrobe change stuff. Like, when he's going into his lab, he changes into his lab coat just because, like, it's not doing anything special, it's just like, this is his lab attire.
Yeah, you gotta wear it.
And his secret lab has a few, like, things, like failed equipment. Not a ton of references, though, except for, like, a huge things, like a huge ping pong paddle, I think is, like, the weirdest thing. It's sort of like a bat cave kind of thing. Like, why would you have giant anything? Is sort of, I went with that type of mentality.
I like that. He's got some interesting stuff in the panel when he's wheeling over his little cherry picker type,
you have the ping pong paddle.
He's got some funny stuff in the background there. I can't even totally tell what all of it is.
There is like a mole man kind of digging machine, and there is a mole issue. There's now I'm getting into the next chapter, I think. But when he's reading magazines in his office, he's reading these magazines called the Evil Times.
And it's a good magazine.
It's a good magazine, sure. Why wouldn't you read The Evil Times?
There's a lot of important information in there.
One issue, like the one that on the top of the pile, is about the Mole King. It's like a special issue. I think it might be just that trope. There's always like a Mole King, and he has his own digging machine. Who knows? Maybe he's a fan. Maybe he likes the Mole King.
I'll tell you what. I'm a big Mole Man fan. So yeah. I would love to find out more about this Mole King. So whatever you know about him, please send me over your copy of Evil Times or whatever you got.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Like, yeah. I'm not sure I have that particular issue, but I'll check.
You can really tell how old this comic is when you get into the next chapter, because the jokes in the back about the receipts. Now it's funny to think that this company has, like, you know, printed out receipts from 2010 and 2011, but actually we were making this in 2012, so that's why those are the dates that are on the
right, this is chapter 6 for those of you on webtoons.
This used to be known to us, this was the Daddy's Meat story arc, but yeah. For the purpose of naming it and trying to create some variety, I call this one Brain Food, this chapter.
And you can also check how dated it is by looking at the binders Akum has in his office. One that says 2010.
That's what I was talking about with the dates. That's where we...
Yeah, 2011. Oh, you meant that. I thought you meant receipts.
Picturing... No, you're right. We don't know that those are... We don't know what's inside of them in my mind.
But yeah.
I'm thinking they're just like binders of receipts and accounting and stuff like that.
Here's a fun detail. You can actually see that he's using Windows since there's even like a small slice off for the start menu at the bottom. And you can tell there's a sort of like a clock as well at the bottom right. Yep. It's supposed to be like a very vague depiction of Windows. And he has his Gloom branded mug as well.
And that's because a lot of people don't know, originally this comic was funded by Windows.
Exactly. Not Microsoft Windows, but actual Windows, like, that you'd have on your house.
They thought they needed more exposure.
Exactly, like, people don't have enough Windows.
I felt very sad. One of my favorite panels, and this is funny because this is some of your oldest art here.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, something that we never even caught in all those years was that Steve's mug says world's greatest boss.
No. We caught it.
Did we just say fuck it?
Yeah, we said fuck it. Like, the typo, I think what happens sometimes when I've, like, sketched with my sloppy penmanship, when I've sketched anything, when I go into inking mode, I don't see text. I only see lines.
Right.
And I think that's where the R disappeared. The sketch was so sloppy that I was and then I was done. And it became world's greatest boss. Maybe got it for cheap. Like, sometimes these mugs, you know, they're... Oh, this is dated. He has the flip phone on the belt clip.
You really nailed it, though, because every annoying guy that I worked with in an office around this time insisted on having the flip phone belt clip. And it was almost like, if you, like, before you met them, if you saw that they had the flip phone belt clip, you were like, I'm probably not going to want to talk to this guy.
Mm-hmm. And he is, he got it because he is based on Dwight from The Office.
Makes sense.
And whoever the guy, I don't remember the name of the character, but from the movie Office Space, the guy, the boss from Office Space.
Right.
This guy is sort of like an amalgamation of Dwight and that guy, molded into one. He has, like, Dwight's shirt and pants, but more the appearance of the guy from The Office.
I think you nailed it. He definitely gives off that vibe. And Steve, he's going to be important to... He's got some big scenes coming up still. This is not the last we've seen of him. I mean, not just in the chapters we're talking about now, but even in the ones we'll be releasing in May and June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's one of my favorite characters. I almost wish we could use him more.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, he didn't. Maybe we should have made him the fourth unofficial member getting backstory.
Yeah, he's too bad. He's too late now. As an antagonist, he is so, like, lackluster and gloomy. Never mind. That was gonna be like a tangent. That's
important.
But yeah, he's definitely underutilized. But I think he communicates really well what we're trying to say with that character.
Oh yeah, and something that, you know, the whole reason I was thinking about him in the first place in this scene when we were kind of transitioning from the last chapter to this one is because your artwork here, this is some of the early stuff you drew, except for the panel where Gloom envisions this recipe for mind control, which is actually one of the last things I think you ever drew for The Evil Eye. And I love the gradient you put on it, and it really broke my heart that I had to kind of cut this panel in half to fit it on Webtoon, because there's a lot of funny stuff that you snuck into the background there that, that doesn't make the cut on the Webtoon version. So if you've only read this comic on Webtoon and now you're listening to our podcast, please go read this Finding Evil Chapter 6 on nickmarino.net and just click on that panel and, you know, luxuriate in Mills's great mathematical equations.
Exactly. I was going to say, like, to me, the funniest thing is the fake math. Like, it is just like gibberish, and it's not even. I'm not even trying. It's just like lines and numbers.
I like the marketing plan. You got to have the mustache.
Yeah, mustache. Oh yeah.
It's really important to have the paternal figure selling you cheap meat.
Exactly. Hence, daddy's meat.
You know what? Ronald McDonald maybe would be even more effective if he had a mustache.
I'm sure you would.
Yeah, I like that.
What else? Time-traveling Austrian killer robot. Yeah, Terminator. I don't know. That I guess that one's fine.
it's really on the nose.
It's really on the nose. That's really like, and some stuff's weird. Like, why would Gloom wear out Kiss the Cook?
I like that.
Apron. I mean, it's not. It's kind of out of character. But
to our astute readers, though. Pay attention to what Hester is doing in this meeting.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, we don't really... The comic doesn't really address what she's doing. She's planning something, but we don't really know what.
Yeah, the slow burn. And then we reach our guys that we were discussing at the beginning of the podcast, which was a very late insertion into this, because we felt like maybe we needed to kind of have some transition, I think, between them being in the kitchen to them having the restaurant, and it became these Guidos getting manipulated by Gloom.
When did we start recording? Because
we kind of started recording right when we were talking about It's Always Sunny and stuff like
that. Oh, okay. No need to repeat that stuff. Yeah,
no,
these are the guys from It's Always Sunny, because I was watching it at the time.
I do have to say. I tend to cringe at it's something when you're Italian American, depending on who you interact with, they have this like weird sort of subconscious thing where they always want to like ask you if you like The Godfather or if your family's in the mafia and stuff like that. And after a while, you kind of cringe from it. But I feel like these guys are a bit more like a funny. This is all more like the Mario side of the trope, you know, where I feel like it's kind of like a funny thing to enjoy as opposed to this thing where like, you're like, oh, really? Like, is that all you can think about?
I kind of felt like that was the right move to pick. I mean, I think Always Sunny walked a fine line, and I think they managed to be funny without being offensive.
For the most part, I feel like they pull it off. Although, I can't speak much for later seasons. Maybe they lost their way with the blackface joke. I'm not totally... That one, I think, might have, like, you know... Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm specifically talking about...
Like, with those characters, I agree.
Yeah, with those characters. And I think that's sort of also why I want to pay tribute to that. Like, if we want these... Or wait, was it my... might have been your idea to use those characters. Come to think of it.
What's that? I don't know, but I like how we did it.
Yeah, who cares? Anyway,
I don't even think they have names, because I think they are just those characters. I mean, it's basically a cameo.
Yeah, pretty much. Like and I think that's that for that chapter, right? I mean, there are a few other minor background jokes. We actually didn't, in the previous issue, address the fact that the slime monster continues to appear. In the background.
I love the slime monster. I did a tweet about it the other day and nobody cared. I was very heartbroken.
The slime... Sorry, I'm a terrible tweeter.
You're not being blamed. I'm just saying. Just.
I mean, he's one of the two characters that's in our... If you go to Webtoons, what do you call it? Like the thumbnail for our page? Like the main image for our Evil Life page?
Oh, yeah, the icon. Yeah,
the icon. Yeah, he's one of two characters in the icon. There's Gloom, and then there's this pink spatter on Gloom. That's him. That's the slime. He's like the second most important character in the story.
He's a Gloom's pet, Slimy.
Exactly. He has a name.
Slime.
Oh, man, you Slimester. Named it. Now we can't kill it. Anyway, so he sort of keeps reappearing in the background every once in a while. I kind of like it. Like it's like a story in of itself.
It is. It's a good little background callback that you snuck in there. And you know, something that we didn't explain well when you move on to our next chapter, which I had a hell of a time coming up with a name for, but I feel like Flavor Savior kind of ended up working. In the long run, it starts off with Hester doing the commercials for Gloom's new fast food restaurant, which is her only involvement with this scheme.
Yeah,
because she's busy doing her own thing, which you will learn about in our, you know, in the chapter that comes out after this one, which is going to be, I can't do this math, chapter number 9.
Yeah,
of Finding Evil. But, like, this is really her – she was like, okay, we didn't put this into the – this doesn't make it into the story. But basically, I think our headcanon for this was, like, she's like, okay, I'll do the commercial for you, but I don't want to be involved. Otherwise, this is stupid. I also think she's probably a vegetarian, so she wasn't really feeling it.
I have this vague memory of before the Guido transition that we sort of had it semi-scripted that Gloom was like, all right, if you're not – up for the commercial, then you have to pay rent. And she was then like, fine, I'll do it.
Oh my
and
god,
then
I friend, think you're right. I think that and was, I think that, yeah.
I think the first panel in chapter, is this 7 or 8? This is...
The one with her at the top? Yeah, chapter 7. Yeah,
7. Yeah. So I think that was the punchline to that joke.
Yeah. I think you're right, it was. I killed it, man. Sorry.
I don't think that it was that great. It's a pretty like typical class. It's not that great of a punchline. You didn't kill. There wasn't much to kill because it's such just a cliche type of. Well, if you don't want to do it, then you better pay rent. Switch. She does it. I mean, that's sort of the. It's been done a million times. It's kind of expected.
She clearly does not have a solid cash flow, though, let's be honest.
Exactly. She's unemployed, and we don't really need an explanation. She's one of the crew. Of course, she does the commercial. I mean, it's not...
She's also, like, I don't feel like she's that worried about, like, you know, as we find out, like, Blarf, he actually does care about, like, paying rent. But, like, mm-hmm. Hester doesn't give a crap. You know, I feel like she'll just kind of, like, rough Gloom up a little bit and be like, I'll give it to you in a year or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, that was, I think, originally what happened. But then we have the restaurant. What else? There are a ton of people at this restaurant.
And man, so many people at this restaurant.
I make a cameo.
Yeah.
And I'm using a smartphone. I'm in line. I had shorter hair when I drew this panel. It's way back.
Is it really long right now?
Oh, it's long. I don't know, like below shoulder length.
We've completely reversed since beginning.
Exactly. You had long hair at the start of it, and I must have thought like, oh man, that Nick Marino, that hair looks like badass. I need to grow my hair long.
See, I had the reverse envy. I was like, I gotta go short. I gotta follow the lead.
Of course, that's exactly what happened. But yeah, I'm using a smartphone. You can sort of tell that this is definitely like early. This is like the 2010s, 2009.
Yeah. Fun fact, the smartphone had just been invented when you drew this.
Exactly. Actually, I think I bought mine in 2008. I was an early adopter. And so this was sort of the transitional phase where people still had flip phones, but some people started using smartphones. And, yeah.
This panel has been like maybe rewritten like 10 times. And like after receiving artwork for it. And I guess maybe I subconsciously felt jealous about your cameo and sort of gave myself a cameo in this one.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
But that was like, I had this, I feel like maybe, did we already talk about this? I feel like maybe I talked about this on the last podcast. I can't remember. It happened to me, maybe I just like, I don't know where, maybe I was just telling Rosie about it. But I had this thing happen to me the other day. Well, actually, at the start of the whole quarantine out here in Cali. where we had gotten some takeout, and I called up I think this is the last out food that we've gotten since then, maybe. And I called up the Greek restaurant around here, and I ordered something for Rosie. And, you know, she was like, "What's your name?" And I was like, "Nick." And I say my name so fast, like you were saying at the beginning of our recording. You say your own name really quick like that.
Right.
Maybe I said my name really fast because I got down there and I was like picking up an order for Nick. And she was like, and then I told her what I ordered. And she was like, "Oh, I thought you said your name was," I think she said she thought I said my name was Mac or Mac. I don't know what she thought I said it was. It definitely wasn't what I said. And this happens to me all the time where people think I say my name as something that would almost never be somebody's name.
So you're somewhere at the Daddy's Meat restaurant waiting for an order for Nick, and Blarf's yelling, "Nuck, your big daddy's calm." Yeah,
did I go too far with that? Maybe I
No. It was a good story. I think Nuck was the funniest.
Appreciate your support.
Mac is way funnier. Mac is not as fun as Nuck.
I think she thought I said my name was Mac, like M-E-C-K. I don't know what she thought. But Nuck, I'm sure I've gotten that one too.
Oh, and this is the chapter where Bloom is reading those Evil Times issues.
That's a good one. And I like how you sort of the dragon did a good edition. Job with the passage of time by showing the stuff in his office kind of growing in more ways than one.
Stuff. Yeah, the plan was just a background thing, just to show the passage of time. That and his bookshelf sort of getting fuller and fuller with stuff.
He's always the employee of the month. I feel like that's
important as well.
Realistic.
Definitely. And what else?
Does he have a little ball of himself on his shelf?
He does, in the original purple. He was supposed to be purple.
My God, that's right.
And I kept it on the doll just because, you know, it felt nice having like the original Gloom color scheme somewhere in the story.
It's an Easter egg for us.
Yeah, so speaking of, there are two Easter eggs below as well. Below the doll.
Yeah, the super haters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll link to that.
So that's your an older
post
comment.
Or whatever, tweet or post, whatever, Instagram, Twitter, wherever. I think I put it on both of our story that we did together, which was our first collaboration, which I look back on very fondly. I feel like it holds up really well for a little five pager.
Yeah, me too. It's a little raunchy, as a heads up, but
quite raunchy.
Yeah, quite raunchy. I have two cameos in this one.
Wait, so is that you?
It is
under the desk. I thought it was, but I was never totally sure about that.
So my hair's grown longer. I mean, if I'm gonna put anyone as like I'm not at least I'm not the footstool, but I am
leg. In the process of lettering this, I turned Footstool Guy into a secret cameo.
Really?
Yeah. I gave him the name of somebody that I truly despise.
Okay. Does he look like the guy as well?
He does, kind of. Yeah, that's what I thought of it.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So some of the slaves are just used for these basic tasks, such as like being table legs. Rather than replacing the desk, he has such an abundance of brainwashed zombie slaves that he can basically just use them as furniture.
Yeah, it's great.
I kind of like that.
I think it's very it's very Gloom. As we see, he decides that's not enough for him. He needs to expand, and he. Then we get into some really outrageous panels of him using his fried chicken to mind control people to basically attempt to turn Megaville into sort of a monument to him and his business.
I think the most LucasArts thing I ever did in this entire comic is the panel with the guy with the tattoo that says mom and the lady with the skull tattoo with the snakes. For one, I love the fact that both have tattoos, but also the stores. Something to me, the Sandy Mangoes Super Duper Dry Cleaners and Milkshake Emporium sound like a LucasArts store. Plus, I think I watched Little Shop of Horrors fairly recently for drawing this panel.
Yeah.
So the puppy store got the name Little Poppy Shop of Horrors. See what I... That's not that good, I guess.
I like it. I like both of them a lot.
It's so bad that it's kind of good.
This is interesting. Oh. These panels were drawn much later than other panels in the story.
Oh, yeah.
But they were also drawn at a very interesting time for you artistically, when you were really bending perspective and proportions a lot more.
Yeah, I was playing around a lot more. But I am noticing things like they don't have shadows beneath their feet, the two people carrying the dry queen, stuff like that. Like,
everything that's else something you would shadow. Add, yeah. Because they're not, these aren't like these aren't like late panels that you drew for this comic. They're like somewhere in the middle, maybe.
All right, yeah, you might be right, but they are different.
Yeah.
Oh, puppies are sold by the pound. Notice?
It's a good way to sell them.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like by weight. Like, I'll have 3 pounds of puppies, please. Oh, that's good.
I like this product that you came up with, the chicken shake.
Oh, yeah, the chicken shake. Yeah. What is it? It's like a, yeah.
I'd try it. I don't even eat meat, but I'd try it.
Yeah. It's a chicken that you can drink.
I don't know what it tastes like. I gotta know. You put a piece of chicken in a blender. What are you getting out? I want to know what it tastes like.
The fact that the bone is sticking out makes me think it's not even blended.
I mean, it does kind of look like they just put a straw into a piece of chicken.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like, it's like a plastic.
I would say not at all far-fetched for products that KFC was coming up with at the time. This is around the time of the Double Down.
The Double Down.
Which was a...
Not familiar, yeah.
It was a fried chicken sandwich where pieces of fried chicken were the buns.
Oh... That's a lot of meat.
It was nuts, man. I think it had something weird, like it was like fried chicken, nacho cheese, fried chicken, something else, fried chicken. I can't remember. They were really going out there at the time.
I think that's sort of the what we're going for in general. Our comment really on like just super fast food chains in general. Just
definitely. And it didn't work out so well for Gloom here.
Oh, I mean, he's still employee of the month. That's good.
I mean, props to him because he leveled up with that Employee of the Month photo.
He hired like a top end like photographer, like an erotic photographer, and just went with it.
But this, to me, the end panel on this, you know, the final scene we see inside Daddy's Meat is one of my fave panels that you've drawn for this story. Because I just love the angle that you chose and the lighting that you did. And in a way, this I feel like is sort of a signifier of your artistic growth. Because this is definitely like, when I was going through the art, I realized it had been drawn a bit earlier than I originally thought.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel this was kind of one where you were like, I feel like you really got into this panel when you're drawing this one. Just the lighting and everything. And it represents to me kind of... a lot of the ambitious choices you ended up making as we got deeper into the story.
I think what happened was it's filled with goo and gunk and just smelliness. And if you think about the panels I tend to give like extra emphasis to on our next comic, generally the ones that are just filled with rancid, yucky things tend to be a bit more detailed.
This is we share a love of gross things.
Yeah, it's like if it's really gross, you really want to communicate that, and that requires a lot of detail. I think that's sort of what happened.
Yeah, how could you not want to show that? That's like one of the most fun things about doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you want to sort of sell the smell.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man, wow.
Yeah.
Where was that name when I was trying to come up with a title for this chapter?
Sell the smell.
By the way...
Yeah.
Shout out to our number one commenter who has just been relentlessly providing terrible takes, Felicia the Marmot.
Of course.
Yeah. Luxuriating in every failing of our characters.
I think secretly she just loves the comic.
She really likes it.
Yeah.
big time.
So we're on our final chapter, and was chicken stock drops supposed to be a joke or not? I cannot remember.
Hold on, let me go over here and look. My connection to Webtoon just died.
Oh.
Annoyingly. So I can't see that version, but obviously.
The Nick Marino one.
I'm looking at it.
So on the news broadcast,
it's a good joke.
That's all stock drops. I think, but I'm not sure if it is a joke or not. It could be. it could be completely unintentional because it doesn't. It's a little too smart. I like stupid jokes. I don't think I it could be. Who knows? Anyway, we also communicate the weird giant statue in the park. Something happened. Like, what does it say? It cuts off on Webtoons.
So I'm on my site, so I can. This is good because we'll have the two takes on it.
Oh, there we go.
City demolishes weird giant statue in the park.
Yeah, I like it. Says weird. Like, it's an official newscaster still calls it because nobody. I guess nobody knows really like who the hell authorized this.
Let's be real. Nosy News, not a very professional organization. They didn't even come up with a great name.
That's true. It's true. She has a big nose, though. Maybe that's where the name comes from.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. We'll get to see her again. She'll be in our next chapter, I think.
Another goo monster, this time in a jar.
Yeah, living up to that pet style, old slimy or Slimerino, named after me.
901 uses for spam.
That's a good book. Yeah. I like these books.
I like I Am Rubber, Your Learning Comebacks. That is definitely a LucasArts reference because they use the whole, like, I Am Rubber, You Are Glue thing all the time.
Now, I got to ask you, one of these, so sometimes in our comic, depending on the way that you've put the layers together, I can see stuff that gets hidden by other objects in the foreground. In this case, I tried to figure out what the title in this book was, Surviving Something. It's not in the art, so I don't know what it is.
Oh, wow. Am I supposed to remember? I have no idea. Surviving what? That was too long ago. I'm sorry. Surviving something. Something chemistry in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Bad science something. Oh, time travel. Time travel easy peasy.
That's my favorite. Because I wish time travel was easy peasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that no self-help, can you hear this, help. Are you hearing this loud music in the background?
No.
Okay, good. I don't know if it's my neighbor or if somebody's just in their car playing some. So you know what? It's the quarantine life.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have Blarf's ID tag at Night Corp.
Man. I can't believe he took that job.
He took the job, you know.
I'm with Hester on this one. Shouldn't have taken it.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta pay the rent, though. And
I understand, but also, like, Gloom is the one who screwed up their whole great make-it-rich scheme with his ego. So, like, I feel like he should be on the hook for the rent.
Definitely. I mean,
If he hadn't fired Blarf, that restaurant probably would have been a success.
That was my philosophy. Right. He was carrying the whole thing. But
yeah, he was.
Sure, I'm with Hester, though, because, I mean, Blarf has a good point. She never complained when he worked there.
No. Hester is being hypocritical, though. I agree with you in that regard. No. Yeah. Whoa.
They're eating pastrami.
Yo, I just figured something out. I'm on nickmarino.net looking at this comic, and I worked really hard, as you might remember, to find the right reader for this. I don't know. I feel like we talked about it a bunch. Because I wanted a reader that would display the panel as large as possible in your browser window.
Yeah.
And it mixed results depending on the device you're using. But I'm on my laptop right now. And it zooms in pretty large on the panels while you read through. And something I didn't realize until right now was if you're on a Macintosh and you're doing a two-finger scroll on the trackpad, you can scroll through the panels that way. So you click it. You're zoomed in, and it's like you swipe between the panels up and down. Oh. It's really great. I loved it. Envira Gallery, I think is the name. Shout out to Envira Gallery for powering the evil life.
That's a nice scrolling feature.
It's really good, man. So I'm scrolling through these panels, and I'm loving it. And as you said, they're eating some – I can't say that word properly.
Oh, Paschetti, of course.
How do you end up with it like that? What letters do you reverse?
I think you're just flipping. Yeah, you're flip. Wait, you're
the P
you're,
and the S.
You're moving the S. No, because you're moving the S after the A. Because I think consonant clusters are difficult. So I think the SP, the SP, is a little difficult for some people. And I think that's why the S gets moved, I think.
I gotta ask you a question about this stuff. Wait, no sauce?
No sauce. I know. I mean, it was just plain. I think they're having meatballs with it, but no sauce.
Because meatballs and no sauce. What kind of hell kind world of, do they live in?
Exactly. Typical Swedes forgetting sauce.
Now look.
Not even.
It could be a white sauce.
Sure, it could be.
Yeah, or maybe it's seasoned.
They should have at least like a bottle of ketchup on the table.
This has one of my favorite background jokes, which we actually, I feel like, discussed a lot when you made this, because Gloom is so lazy that he has to have some type of tool to spin his noodles to get him into his, pasta.
Yeah, exactly. He's, that's pretty much it. It's supposed to communicate the fact that he's too lazy to feed himself.
But something that happened off-panel is that it broke while he was eating, because as you get down, you see that.
Well, he's fixing something. Maybe it breaks, or maybe he's fixing something else.
I both seem plausible. Oh, yeah, he has his lab coat on at the dinner table. So as you can see, he's like, things are like not going well for him post-daddy's meat. He's sort of just a wreck, basically. He's fixing tools at the dinner table. Yeah. He's all like,
and as you can see by
his attitude, he's not even, he's just trying to antagonize both of them in this scene.
I remember why I had him building things.
What was it?
He's fixing something for the end. He was like, okay, logically speaking, Gloom's still kind of the guy. Like, even if he's lazy, he keeps busy all the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
With all his projects. And you know what I'm talking about. He's trying to fix something, and it's going to pay. Like, it won't communicate in the final chapter what it is, because it was sort of just for me, because it made sense that that's what he would be doing, even if we never tell our readers that that's what it is, because that's not important.
He's fixing what I think he's fixing, right?
He's definitely fixing what you're thinking.
Okay, got it. Fixing. And, you know, speaking of that will call back here, I snuck in a little callback in the scene, mm-hmm. which is that I just copy and pasted a word balloon that Gloom used way back in Growing Evil Chapter 5 for Hester.
Oh, wait, is it that?
it's the right response.
It is. She's definitely making that noise.
There's just all kind of Easter eggs. When you get into the evil life, you're entering a world of delicious Easter eggs.
Blarf's office.
So Easter eggy.
Blarf equals fun.
And
notice how he drinks tea instead of coffee.
Yep.
What kind of psychopath doesn't need coffee to like get through a work day? He's high on life.
I'm an individual who drinks a lot of tea, and I'll tell you, there's some highly caffeinated tea. Okay.
I know. I'm just, but I mean, yeah. I mean, I drink tea.
Now, come on. We know that's herbal tea. He's definitely drinking an herbal tea.
He's definitely. I mean, yeah. Maybe it's even red tea. Like
he's so innocent.
Maybe he's that guy.
But he's so innocent that he likes his job.
Exactly. I have like a cup of tea a day. That's my like average, I think.
I've had two or three cups of tea just while we're talking on this podcast.
Man, you are you're basically running to the bathroom 10 times a day.
No, you know what? I've gone full tea recently. I drink more tea than water now.
Whoa.
I've moved over. I'm just full tea.
I'm not saying it's a laxative, but it does make you go to the bathroom.
Maybe for some people, but I've moved beyond that point.
Oh, you're like immune to the effects of that mm-hmm. tea effect. That's good.
It might be the kinds I'm drinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, is tea a diuretic for me? No.
No. All right. Personally, I am a boring kind of I just plain old Earl Grey every time.
That's one kind should... I don't keep it in the house, that kind. I'm not a fan.
I guess it's because it's also caffeinated. Well, it's not caffeinated. It has its own substance, but it's similar to caffeine.
It's not a bad tea, but it is a very unusual tea to me. I don't quite get what they're going.
I'm just boring in terms of beverages in general. Like I'll get the standard kind like all the time. Like it is tea. Like it is to me.
It's fine. There's nothing wrong with
it. It is sort of what I expect from tea. How did we end up here? Oh yeah, I called Lars a psychopath drinking tea in the middle of a work day. That's what happened.
Work equals fun, baby. You gotta enjoy that herbal tea. Fine.
And as you pointed out,
what's
happening. Yeah.
He is probably a psychopath though because he's using that trackball.
Oh yeah, we sort of discussed this earlier as well. Trackball, man. That is dated. You know what?
Oh my God! I just realized something. You know why I thought these were all binders of receipts?
Mm-hmm.
Because of your great background lettering here, favorite receipts on one of the binders.
I forgot about that one. I thought those they all should work. You know, the one says favorite receipts.
Yeah, he's got good binders of like, there's tiers here because there's fun work, there's super fun work, and then there's the fave receipts binder, which is like next level.
Yeah, is he an accountant? I don't really know what he works with spreadsheets and stuff.
It's unclear, but he's got Gloom's old job. That much we know. Can you imagine how much Steve and what was the name of the woman who did Gloom's interview? Deborah?
I think so. I wanted to say Rosemary, but that's the one from accounting that Steve mentions.
Can you imagine how much they must have just been absolutely thrilled when they hired him? As like this sort of weird sticking it to Gloom thing.
Yeah.
He must have loved it.
I can't imagine Blarf being qualified at all. Like he has no formal education. He's just...
But you remember our idea for him, which I don't know if we've ever properly communicated in this comic until maybe slowly nowadays. He was supposed to just be like, everybody just thinks he's a monster who can do nothing, but actually he's good at every job you give him.
Right, that's true. As long as it's menial.
Yeah, exactly.
His quality.
This was like our big character development for him, is that he was like the perfect, like menial worker was supposed to be the idea.
Yeah.
And that was like what his planet was all about. It was like it was this very deep thing we wrote in that I feel like somehow got really lost in the process of making.
I have a joke about it when he talks to his when he says sees like the hologram of his mom. Yeah. She says something akin to that, but it's not really. We don't touch upon it a lot.
Not really. His planet was supposed to be like, what if Krypton was average? I think was the idea. You know, hilariously, in the process of making this comic and all this stuff, the Lego movie came out. And I think that the Lego movie society is kind of what I had envisioned for what that planet would be like. You know, when like...
Yeah, they just, all the workers.
Yeah, and they're just like happy to be these boring workers. And everything that they do is just the most average version of something.
That's true. That pretty much is like Blarf's planet.
That's kind of what I had in mind, yeah. Or that is a good representation of what I originally had in mind that we kind of just, we were like, whatever.
Yeah. I just noticed that the lottery pool in the background says, in the final panel, it says Alien Blarf. Like, they emphasize the fact. They should have had, like, a regular Blarf as well. Like,
I'm wondering if whoever put the pool together just wrote him down twice on it, because, like, they didn't. Like, Blarf maybe wrote his own name on, not realizing that somebody wrote Alien on there.
Exactly. Could be. Oh, and the fun run. I think that's an Office reference.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't have never known, because honestly, fun run is just a very stupid, normal American thing.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, to me, because that is like one of the things that it's, for one, it's such like an iconic episode of The Office. But also, I mean, we do have runs here, but we never call them fun runs.
Oh, you guys run too?
Oh, sure. I mean, there are like blood drives and stuff like that. Like, yeah, we run. Yeah. Like every once in a while, We go outside. We also shop for food, like, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
But I think since we never call them fun runs, it wouldn't really, I mean, wouldn't rhyme in Swedish either. So I think that's when I was exposed to just like the term.
Oh, wait, run. Could you give me a literal Swedish translation of fun run, please?
Okay, so fun is, I guess, there are different ways of, kul is...
Wait, could you say that again?
Kul.
Do you know, hilariously, that sounds like you're saying the name of our next comic very fast.
Oh, yeah. So it's spelled...
Maybe there's some type of good pun potential in there, just saying.
Oh, like for our limited Swedish audience.
Yeah, for the Swedish branding, exactly. Yes. Okay.
It's just K-U-L, and run is spring.
So, if you put them together...
Kul spring.
Like,
it doesn't really, like, run. That's not what we would call it either, I think. We have a couple of these. But again, man, two bad words. Like, everyone, like, half of the Swedish vocabulary still sort of matches, like, English equivalent words, like, pretty closely.
Mm.
But these two were just way off. But yeah, cute spring.
Maybe one day we'll... I can't even repeat it. Kul.
Kul?
Kul. And then what's the second one?
Okay. Spring.
I can't do that. Well, the sound spring, at the beginning that. Of that word, I can't do it.
Sure. But try to say spring, as in this.
Yeah, like, I mean, I can say spring, but it's so different from what you're saying.
But the R, yeah, but because you need, like, more of a rolling R, like spring.
I've never really been able to roll an R.
Well, for one, I am from the north of Sweden, and we roll our R's a little more than people from the south. So if you were to meet someone from Stockholm, they'd probably say spring.
Ah.
So a little closer to your spring.
Got it.
Because ours, as always in most countries, vary a lot.
Yeah, that's true. They really do.
Yeah, both in America and, like, in England, wherever you go, ours will always vary a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the R is pretty far off from the Swedish R I use. But both, I mean, if you were to use that R and speak Swedish, you'd still communicate the R sound, so people would still understand what you're
saying. Oh, that's good. That's good. I want to talk to you about something un-evil life related, unless you feel like you have some other stuff to get into here.
No, I'm sort of still geeking out about all of these, like, old background jokes I've forgotten. I've had my fill.
They're good. I love them.
I'm happy. I am pleased. I am done. I think.
It's after the end theme. We've enjoyed that great, just that little theminess, and I want to find out from you now. I want to hear about real life. I want to hear about how your May the 4th was this year. Because I saw you build quite a few lightsabers. And as we were discussing before we started recording, you finished work on something you've been building. You've been glooming it up in your lab.
I have. I am I enjoy Star Wars, you could say.
Yeah.
Not only the films, but all of the props and stuff related to Star Wars as well. And I used to build lightsabers every May the 4th. Like, these light-up lightsabers with soundboards and just, like, you know, every year I'd go with, like, which color should I build for this year? Should I build, like, a dark side lightsaber or a light side lightsaber? All that kind of stuff. And I started perfecting that technique. It was a lot of fun. But as my kids were getting older, I felt the need to include them in this celebration of May the 4th. Originally, I'd just build, like, a lightsaber. We'd watch Star Wars together. I'd usually get them, like, some Star Wars toys. Would be a lot of fun as well. Like, for me as well, because then we could play with all the Star Wars toys.
Yeah, and definitely your oldest, too, would have been building them with you this year.
They were all building with them.
Whoa! Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
How old is your youngest kid now?
Oh, he's 3, and he wanted to
build a real one.
So the thing is, some parts for these sabers were basically just like junk that I've kept throughout the years. Because whenever I see something that looks sort of like a lightsaber part, I'll keep it. But for the most part, I 3D printed these different hilt parts. And then I got these like PV electrical pipes that you can get at like any hardware store. And I double tubed it because we built these last year, by the way. I just didn't post it because I forgot to take a bunch of pictures. But last year we built, I think, 12 lightsabers. This year we built 11. So we actually didn't hit the same. But some kids that participated last year got a little too old to join on this. Like they were a little too cool, I guess, to join in this year. But okay. A bunch of new kids joined in this year instead. And what I did was I 3D printed like a ton of different saber hilt parts. Like way more than I needed because I wanted to give them options. And you'd have like a pommel at the end. You'd have like an emitter part where the lightsaber sort of bursts out. Yeah. And just a bunch of different buttons and handles and stuff like that. I also took like old wires for anyone who wanted to like staple a wire to the side of the saber to make it look a little like a beat up and junky and crappy.
I really liked the wires. I thought that was a great touch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the one with the red wire, that one's mine. That one's... Because nice. I built one for myself as well. So we built 11 sabers with mine included. And the process was basically, I pre-painted everything in just one plain color. So whoever wanted like extra details, like a golden detail on a black hilt part, or like a silver detail on a black part, they could take a silver or a gold pen or a black pen and just draw that themselves. Because everyone besides my 3-year-old were old enough to like do the details themselves.
Yeah.
So anyone who wanted to go back and just like add stuff, they could. And some just built like these basic bland, like all silver or all gold. And that was fine as well. But they started off by just picking like, what saber color do I want? Do I want a green one? Do I want a blue? I made one orange one as well. So do I want like a green, blue, red, or orange saber? And then they got to pick all these different parts. And they basically just like customized them. And once they were happy with their design, I hot glued it all together, gave them the gold, black, and silver pens so they could go in like add details and stuff to really personalize. And it was all their design. I didn't really want to like be part of that process because I wanted them to figure out like what order these pieces go. I just introduced like, okay, this is like a typical emitter part that you probably want at the top, but some of them use like double emitter parts, some parts as handles, even though they're supposed to go at the top.
Yeah.
They work just as well like as handle parts. Some of them skipped having parts with buttons, which look pretty good, which made them look like kind of sleek and streamlined.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, like the Star Wars geek in me is like, but how do you turn it on? Like,
I mean, personally, I would go for one with like too many buttons.
Oh yeah, but me too. Like, I mean, you saw mine. It has like four button slot and like the wire. It was great. And then they got to duel with them, and they're pretty sturdy, but they're not that heavy, so you don't really hurt yourself with them. Oh, and the tip of the lightsaber was also like a 3D printed part that I sort of had to design to fit the width of the pipe. Like, yeah, they're just these like plain colored. And I'd love them to glow and to make sounds and all that stuff. But all things considering, and budget wise again as well, because I mean, if I build them like this, they don't. I mean, I've never really calculated the cost, but I think we end up at like $2 a saber or something like that.
That's so cheap.
Yeah, I know. Like maybe like $2 or $3. Like
including the cost of like the resin for the 3D printing and stuff.
Oh yeah, it's not resin. It's not a resin. Like, resin printers are pretty fragile. These are like just FDM like PLA plastic printers.
Oh yeah, okay, got it.
Like that included, because you need to consider that most of the plastic on the hilt is actually just covering this pipe. So there's not that much plastic being printed. It's basically just like a cover for the pipe. So it's pretty cheap that as well. But yeah, I haven't really actually calculated the cost But still, like, some of the new kids were like, okay, so I left the saber on the table, just so you know. Like, I'm like, dude, you get to keep the saber. I mean, I know it's your first time and all, but it's yours. You designed it. Like, I don't want, like, 10 sabers. Take, and they were, like, super happy. Like, these nine-year-old kids just having a blast. It was super fun.
That's great. That's, and did you get to wear, so you finished work on your Mandalorian helmet?
Yes, I built the Mandalorian.
And were you wearing it?
Oh, no. That was, I would, well, I mean, I could, but I do have, I mean, I have, like, a Darth Vader helmet or something else that I easily could have worn instead. If I, visibility-wise, though, I'm pretty, I might hit a kid by accident, like, if you don't see a lot for those visors. I would, from a safety perspective, I don't think that's a good idea, unless I just wheel it really slowly, and so they can duck pretty much every swing. Otherwise, yeah, it might be a little dangerous. But yeah, I finished my Mandalorian helmet, and I started building it, like, way before the series started.
It must have been, like, I feel like it was, like, a year ago you started working.
It was, like, in, I don't know if it's, like, it was, like, in October or February, okay, November, something like that. But, and I was almost done with it by January, and then I just didn't have time to finish it. And I had, like, a couple of, I pretty much just had to finish parts of the back, because the one I'd printed, this is a 3D printed helmet, by the way. Yeah. The keyhole pattern, they have, like, this pattern at the back of the helmet, was wrong on the file, unfortunately. Oh. I hadn't noticed. So what I did was I printed a new keyhole pattern that matched the correct one. So I had to saw out the old one. I had to, like, fill it in with some filler and sand it down, all that kind of thing. But once that was done, it was pretty much done. Just painted, put some lacquer on it just to make it shiny, and I was done.
That's good.
Really quick. Yeah, I was really happy with it as well.
Yeah, it looks terrific. I love it.
So, and I love the series, The Mandalorian. I am so pleased with that series. Have you watched it?
Oh, yeah. I'm just so glad we got that, because, yeah. I'm glad we had that as the Star Wars to enjoy last year / this year, right? Didn't someone come out this year too?
We haven't gone into.
I know. I still haven't rewatched it.
I have, though, so I'm ready to talk whenever.
Let's do it next time, because it's on Disney Plus now, and one of our friends has let us use their Disney Plus account. So I will do my homework, and when we're talking within the next couple of months, I will rewatch it. And we can finally do a proper conversation. I'll tell you what I did watch, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I finished it, though. I started watching on YouTube. Did we finish that, Rosie? The documentary about Rise of Skywalker? I found that very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I understand how the movie ended up being the way it is now after watching that documentary. It's just... it's fans of it. Yeah, so I'm going to rewatch it. We're going to talk about it next time.
I haven't seen that. I need to watch that, though. So that's my homework.
It's pretty good. It's pretty easy to find. It's long, but I'll send you the link anyway.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like the official one from the DVD, but I feel like the account that posted it, the account's name is just Nick or something like that.
or Nuck, maybe.
Oh, they just took it from Disney Plus. I guess they hadn't taken it down at the time or something. Who the hell knows? Rosie said Disney just wants people to care.
We don't have Disney Plus in Sweden, but I'm sure I could either use a VPN service or, you know,
find it. No, it's probably still on YouTube. But you know what? All it did was just give me some insight. But anyway, for next time, as we're talking about the end of the evil life, we will talk about the end of Star Wars.
Awesome.
Which has really been kind of like a running theme on our podcast here.
It's like a recurring thing. I think it might be my fault a little bit.
I have not historically been a huge Star Wars person, but Mary and Rosie has made this into a very Star Wars household. So I'm very entrenched in it. So it's both of us now. I'm with you.
Have you been reading the Star Wars comic books?
Hold on. Have I read the comics? Barely. But I also have another question coming at me from inside the house. Rosie, come closer and say the question next to the laptop. What is it?
Speak up. Is Gloom, is that Ender really actually the Wrath of Azir? Wenn ich mache mir jetzt sehr mäßig mechanisch mit dem Engels Story.
I can't air that question. You just spoiled the end of the comic.
Sorry, I thought you were that close.
Rosie has a question which has been redacted from this podcast.
We'll save it for later. Did we travel in time?
No, it's okay. We'll save it for next time. Okay. We'll have you back on the next episode to say the question again.
But if I understood the question correctly, is did we read Gloom's book, Time Travel Easy Peasy? Go forward and spoiler.
That was the question.
Yes, that was the question. Then the answer
was and was not the question, which we will answer next time.
Well, I was just going to say then the answer is yes. Obviously, we're in Time Travel Easy Peasy.
You're going to like the answer, Rosie. She can't hear you, but she's going to like the answer.
But yeah.
That's good. I'm done. I need to go eat something.
You know what? I'm just going to give you one last thing, my next helmet bill. I normally don't really talk about
it. Let me hear.
Since you have watched The Mandalorian,
yeah,
I just love the armorer from that show. Like the one who...
Oh, it's so good.
She builds, you know, the one who builds all the armors for the Mandalorian.
Man, that's one of the best characters.
It's such a cool... It's like a Spartan helmet, almost.
In the Mandalorian, the what's her name?
The armor?
The blacksmith.
Yeah, the blacksmith. That's the armor.
Armorer. Sorry, I didn't realize you were saying armorer.
I think I'm slaughtered.
No. It was just me. I just hadn't been catching it.
But you should, like the blacksmith. Yeah, the armorer. She has just such an awesome, like Spartan-like helmet with these little horns and
everything. That's such a good one to make. That's a great idea.
And that is my. It's currently printing.
I love it. Well, hopefully,
it's my summer project.
A year from now, when we're recording a podcast about our underwater koalas, we'll be talking about how incredible your helmet came out and all these awards that you won for your helmet. Is that a thing? Yeah, you win awards for the helmet?
Oh, yeah, there are awards for helmets, for sure.
We'll be talking about the awards we won for the comics, for the helmets, all the Oscars that Rise of Skywalker won. It's going to be crazy.
You know what's really unfortunate with building all of these helmets throughout the years? It's the fact that I can probably like churn out one of these in like a week or two at this point.
So next podcast we'll be talking about the helmet.
But the thing is, I've started pacing myself. Like I sort of want to savor it.
Understand.
So since I've streamlined the process almost too much, they used to take a lot longer, and I kind of missed that.
Basically, you were just doing a really sick humble brag just now.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And you're like, I could just make these with my eyes.
Easy peasy. It's like time travel.
Yeah. Mandalorian helmet, easy peasy.
Yeah.